So what I'd like to do is talk to you a little bit about both some of the work we've been doing and what I think some of the theoretical challenges are to interpreting EHT data, which really center on trying to understand how to model electrons in the accretion flow and or jet in the vicinity of the black hole in the galactic center and M87. So just to remind you a little bit of context for those of you who don't think about this all the time, and this was already alluded to in Sarah's talk, we think close to the horizon, the inflow rate of gas in the galactic center is something like 10 to minus 8.5 solar masses a year, much less than the available gas supply at large radii. We think we know actually quite well the rough densities, temperatures, magnetic field strengths on the scale of the event horizon around the black hole from the interpretation of synchrotron radiation. So the synchrotron emission and the Faraday rotation provide information about the density, the typical Lorentz factor of the electrons, the magnetic field strength, et cetera, and the characteristic numbers are here, 30 Gauss, 10 to the 6 electrons per cubic centimeter. I've quoted this as an electron temperature. What I really mean is the typical Lorentz factor for electrons that emit in the millimeter, which is the bulk of the emission, and so we think this is tracing, as a result, the bulk of the population of electrons around the black hole. So that's Lorentz factors of 10s or 20 or something like that. I phrased it as a temperature, but it's straightforward if you take these numbers to estimate the collisional mean free path of the material. And the collisional mean free path is enormous, many, many, many orders of magnitude larger than the size of the accretion disk. In fact, it's larger than the Bondi radius. And what that means is that the system is not at all in thermal equilibrium, so there's no reason to think that the distribution of particles, for instance, is actually well described by a thermal distribution with a temperature. And what that means is that when you're making models of the emission of the accretion flow or the jet, the results that you get out are sensitive to what you assume about the electron distribution function. And just to highlight that, this is some work done by Jason Dexter and a very good undergraduate at Berkeley, Alwin Mao, showing the difference between thermal and non-thermal models, in this case of accreting plasma, and the non-thermal emission gives you much more spatially extended images. You have kind of hot, high-energy particles at larger distances producing spatially extended images. So the emission, as a result, in trying to interpret what we get out of observations of EHT of the galactic center in M87, are very sensitive to what we assume about the distribution function. And I guess the practical way to phrase this is, as Sarah alluded to, it has to do with how we paint electrons into our calculations. And I think that's actually a very good phrase, because at some level that summarizes the theoretical sophistication of what's being done to date. It really is at the level of painting rather than actual first principles calculations, and that's just because it's a really hard problem. So in particular, in numerical simulations, including, for example, the stuff that we've been doing, the way it's done is you take a fluid simulation which has a single pressure or a single temperature, and then you assign to that fluid simulation electrons in some way. And you have to make a whole host of assumptions. Do you want the electron temperature to be high in the disk or in the jet? And as Monica and Heino have shown, you get rather different results if you put the electrons hot in the disk versus in the jet. You have to make assumptions about whether the electrons have a thermal distribution function or a non-thermal distribution function. And all of these things actually dramatically affect the variability, the emission, et cetera, that's predicted by the calculation. And in many ways, actually, analytic models are a little bit ahead of where the numerical simulations are, in that in analytic models, we self-consistently solve for the thermodynamics of the electrons with some various assumptions about heating, et cetera, but there's a self-consistent model for the thermodynamics Whereas to date in the simulations, the treatment of the thermodynamics is more ad hoc, and I think the clear challenge in interpreting EHT with the exquisite observations we'll have is to figure out ways of disentangling the uncertainty in the electron physics, what's going on in the disk, the jet, the corona, et cetera, ways of kind of teasing out robust observational results in spite of that significant uncertainty. And one reason that this is not completely hopeless in the context, one reason I think for some hope is that we know that non-thermal emission is particularly important in interpreting infrared and X-ray observations, but there's at least suggestions based on the spectrum of the millimeter emission that the distribution function isn't completely non-thermal in the millimeter regions, and so that maybe a thermal distribution function is a reasonable first approximation. So what I thought I would do is just take you through a little bit of what we know and in many cases don't know about the physics in particular of electron acceleration, both in the disk and potentially in the jet, drawing on some of the work that we've been doing, but also some of the work that other groups have been doing, to try to drive home some of the variety of theoretical processes that can produce non-thermal distribution functions that affect millimeter, infrared, X-ray, et cetera, emission. And I'm going to talk both about the disk and then a little bit about potentially the jet and the funnel wall boundary. So this is a nice image from somebody else's simulations of turbulence, MHD turbulence, just showing, you know, the highly structured, in this case, velocity field through the vorticity of the turbulence. Similarly, when you have MHD turbulence, you have large fluctuations in magnetic field from position to position. And one of the things that we've been doing, motivated by trying to better understand the type of distribution functions and particle acceleration that you can get in accretion disks, is take turbulence simulations like this and just put in charged particles and let them respond to the electric and magnetic fields in the turbulence simulation self-consistently. So by self-consistently, I mean we take the results of fluid simulations of turbulence, put in charged particles, and watch how the charged particles evolve. In these calculations, at least, the charged particles don't back react on the turbulence itself, which they should do in a self-consistent calculation. So these are test particles in the electromagnetic fields of the turbulence simulations. And this shows an example. This just shows the RMS change in kinetic energy of particles as a function of time. And what you can get out of these calculations, the dashed line and the solid line, are two different particles. The details aren't particularly critical. The point is that what you can actually measure is that the particles are being accelerated by their interaction with the electromagnetic turbulent fluctuations. And this is actually a form of Fermi acceleration. For those of you who know this stuff, this is an example of what's called a second-order Fermi process, where particles gain energy and lose energy with time, but on average, they actually gain energy and are accelerated. The rate of energy gain is proportional to the energy of the particle. That's the kind of hallmark of a Fermi acceleration process. And then it depends on some of the statistical properties of the turbulent fluctuations. And in particular, this is produced, as actually Fermi originally imagined, by fluctuations in the strength of the magnetic field acting as kind of mirrors that scatter the particles and produce particle acceleration. What we can do then is take the resulting rate of acceleration that we've measured as a function of energy in simulations of turbulence like that present in accretion disks, and actually evolve the distribution function of emitting particles in a system like the galactic center. The black shows an initially thermal distribution function. The blue and the orange show at later times how the distribution function becomes increasingly non-thermal due to this acceleration of high-energy particles. In the specific case of the black hole at the center of the Milky Way, this acceleration is effective only up to Lorentz factors of something like 100. Above that, radiative losses by synchrotron emission turn out to be faster than the rate of acceleration by the turbulent fluctuations. And what that means is that this is a potentially interesting process for affecting the distribution function of the particles that emit in the millimeter and the infrared, probably not in the X-ray, at least for synchrotron emission, because that requires much higher energy particles. But I think this again drives home that there's nothing sacrosanct about assuming a thermal distribution function in a plasma that doesn't have any collisions. It's this kind of physics that really sets the distribution function of particles, and hence the emission for something like the EHT or the infrared work that Andrea and Stefan are doing. Just a slight aside, I think one of the things that really shocked me out of calculations that we've done and Matt Kuntz at Princeton has done, is that if you take a collisionless plasma and you just try to move two parts of a collisionless plasma relative to each other, that means there's a velocity shear in a collisionless plasma, the system responds in a really remarkable way, which is it generates order unity magnetic fluctuations, magnetic mirrors, spontaneously, and that's actually independent of how slowly you shear the plasma. So you're trying to move parts of a collisionless plasma relative to each other. That generates kinetic instabilities, which produce large fluctuations in the magnetic field. So the color scale here is the magnetic energy, which is varying by a factor of 10, okay? Even though the plasma is just being very slowly sheared, slowly relative to, say, the time scale for particles to orbit around the magnetic field. And this just is an example of the kinds of physics, even things you might think that the MHD simulations should get right, like fluctuations in magnetic field strength, they're actually quite plausibly wrong at the order of magnitude level, because the fluid GRMHD simulations don't have any of this kinetic physics in them. Okay? What's the scale of this? So the scale of this here, the amplitude of these fluctuations are independent of the rate at which you shear things. The scale of this image changes with the rate that you shear things. In this image, it's in units of the proton Larmor radius, and the slower you shear the plasma apart relative to the cyclotron frequency, the larger this image would get, the larger the wavelength of the magnetic fluctuations in units of the proton Larmor radius. So I'm happy to talk about this more if people are interested. Okay. I want to briefly touch on reconnection. One of the things that really struck me when we tried to do first principles kinetic simulations of accretion disk turbulence, meaning not assuming it's a fluid, but actually following the distribution function, following the motion of charged particles, and in this case, self-consistently allowing the dynamics of the charged particles to feed back on the currents and the magnetic fields. And so this is really a self-consistent calculation of accretion disk turbulence. The problem is this is a really hard calculation. You're solving the six-dimensional phase space of the particles in the accretion disk, and so we can't do beautiful general relativistic simulations and create mock images of the accretion flow. All we can do right now are little local shearing box patches. But one of the things that came out of that was quite striking, this is magnetic field strength, this is the distribution function as a function of time, was that as you develop turbulence due to the magnetorotational instability in this collisionless plasma, you also efficiently accelerate a non-thermal tail in the distribution function due primarily to magnetic reconnection. As the turbulence becomes nonlinear, the fields start to reconnect, and that produces acceleration of particles. And there's been extremely nice work. Now, this is highlighting work not done by myself, but done by Lorenzo Cerroni and Anatoly Spitkovsky, characterizing in detail the acceleration of non-thermal particles. This is distribution function as a function of Lorentz factor. You get this beautiful power law tail in the distribution function. And these are simulations, just idealized simulations of the reconnection process. And one of the striking things that they find is that the efficiency of particle acceleration depends a lot on whether the magnetic energy is large compared to the rest mass energy or small compared to the rest mass energy. That's shown in the inset here. You get much more efficient acceleration of particles when the magnetic energy is large compared to the rest mass energy than when the magnetic energy is small compared to the rest mass energy. In the context of the GRMHD calculations, this is particularly interesting because it suggests a way that the jet may self-consistently light up. That's the region of the flow in which the magnetic energy is relatively large compared to the rest mass energy. Okay, the last thing I wanted to mention, and this is all in the last bit going to be preliminary results, work very much in progress, is just to give you a sense of some of the work we're trying to do quantifying shocks and dissipation in accretion disks and then folding that into actual calculations of the emission. So this is a plot showing in now actual GRMHD simulations using HARM, Charles and John's code. This shows a diagnostic of where there are discontinuities in the flow, regions where abruptly from one point to another, the velocity field changes essentially discontinuously, which is a metric for something like shocks. And if this is red, i.e. this particular diagnostic is one, you have large discontinuities. If it's blue, you have a smooth flow. And what you see in particular is that this boundary between the jet and the kind of wind or the corona of the disk is a particularly dynamic and likely dissipative region, which may be a region particularly likely to light up in emission. And so the general approach that we're trying to take, and to be completely frank, I don't know how to do this, I think we need to figure out how to do it. I think this is in many ways the theoretical challenge facing us is given the wide range of physics that's actually important for producing, emitting plasma in the accretion disk and jet around the black hole in the galactic center in M87, I think it's going to be very hard for us to figure out from first principles whether the disk or the jet or the funnel wall boundary actually lights up the most. And so I think we need to figure out a way to be able to marginalize over, in some sense, those theoretical uncertainties when interpreting observations like the infrared flaring, the X-ray flaring, or ultimately EHT images. And one way to pose this is that we should be exploring a wide range of models for the electron distribution function and the emitting region, really with as few theoretical priors as to whether it's the jet or the disk that is the most important, and figure out what results are robust given those uncertainties and which aren't. And so just to give you a sense of where we're going with this, this shows an example where we take theoretical models of how turbulence heats electrons. And these are theoretical models that are actually calibrated to correctly reproduce the measured heating of electrons in the low collisionality solar wind, where we actually have data, and put those into GRMHD simulations of accretion disks. Okay, theoretical models, which are calibrated by observations, admittedly, in a totally different context. but at least there's some observational constraints. And I think the really interesting result that comes out of this is, again, that the electron heating is most effective in regions where the magnetic field is relatively strong relative to the gas density. And these are in the kind of coronal regions near the interface between the disk and the jet. And so the next obvious step is to calculate what this would look like from observations, and that's one direction that we're already going in. Okay, Heino's getting up, so I'll actually just stop there.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Questions? Yeah. Jonathan.
I was curious with the shock.
Just a second.
With the shock in the funnel wall, you said you were measuring a discontinuity. Was that pressure discontinuity?
So this is actually a discontinuity in this case, it's velocity and in thermodynamic variable.
I see. So
I can't understand you. I'm
right. Old. So that the question is it a tangential discontinuity or shock? Great question. I don't know the answer yet, but that's exactly what we're trying to figure out.
Christian, you want to comment on this? Okay, give the microphone.
So we tried to do some work on this a while ago about consistently identifying shocks in this region of the flow. It turned out to be a whole lot more difficult than we initially thought. And this is actually not something that we were able to finish at that time, so this might be nice to
I completely agree. This started off as an easy project for a first-year graduate student that got progressively harder as time went on.
Yeah, because we see those density jumps, but it wasn't clear that these are really shocks, right? That is the main question, whether that's... But definitely an interesting region, as we talk about that on Tuesday.
So a very related question to all of this is, we heard from John earlier, and correct me if I'm wrong, but at least for the GRMHD, we should believe, up to the assumptions of the prescription, that it's giving us the right physics and the right results in the disk.
Why?
Up to the assumption that the prescription applies.
Okay.
But we can't even believe that necessarily in the funnel region, because we don't really know what the densities should be, and they're constantly evacuating, et cetera. So how much of this is going to depend upon, there's two uncertainties. One is more fundamental than the other, right?
So I completely agree. This region here, right, I think what the density is there, as John stated, is not particularly believable in the simulations. And so I think I think the best that we can do, at this point at least, in calculating emission from that region is the kinds of things that Heino and Monica have been doing, where you just say, let's assume the emission comes from that region and put in some phenomenological prescription for the emission. That's right. And that's why, I don't know how to do this, but I think given these theoretical uncertainties, you should be very cautious. I think we should be very cautious in taking too literally the results either out of these GRMHD simulations or their GRMHD simulations, right? Okay. And if the interpretation of EHD observations, for instance, depends sensitively on that, then we might want to look at a different observational diagnostic of the simulation.
A few quick questions, Sergey. And
just a quick answer is possible. So what do you actually mean by evolving electrons as a separate fluid here?
So I mean the GRMHD simulations have a total pressure, a single fluid, and then what you can do is you can generalize that to say the system is actually a two-fluid system of protons and electrons. They have the same density and the same velocity, which they will have basically by charge neutrality, but they can have very different thermodynamics. And so what you're really doing is evolving a separate energy equation for the electrons, which has its own set of physics, electron heating, potentially radiative cooling, electron conduction. Those are in the electron equation, not in the proton equation. So that's what
it is. Now, Sarah is
an expression. But you use as a background the GRMHD simulation.
Sarah.
Yes. I just have a quick question also about, so you're basically doing some better physics on top of the old models, but resistive processes like magnetic reconnection, things that are missing as well, you might end up with more mass loading into the funnel. And I was just wondering, do you think that those kinds of processes might actually reduce the fact that you have this bright wall might be an artifact in some sense as well? I mean, have you looked at that?
No, but I think that's a great question. I think that's really the question of what determines the mass loading onto jet field lines, which I don't think we understand very well.
Okay, I think we have to thank Elliot for his presentation now.